Today on Rambling About Cars, tiny trucks and big trucks. Ford Maverick is out. Toyota Land Cruiser is out. And Smith is alive.
You're alive. Tiny
truckers around the world is podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way is Chris Bruce. I missed you last week, man.
Yeah, I missed you too.
I wish you could have been here to watch me turn myself inside out.
Over, yeah, I don't want to be there watching over, you vomit and hallucinate. And so I'm glad I was here.
And over. Well, I tell you, I mean, I got to share this really quick because just to let folks know, I got really sick last week, like sicker than I've been in decades. And I mean, I swear I was completely dead. Heart was stopped. I was at the pearly gates looking across the way was the most majestic, endless
Mustang two you've ever
parking.
Seen.
No. It's better than that. This endless parking lot that went on for infinity of every single vehicle that you could ever possibly want. Even the weird concepts that never made it off of a piece of paper. They were there and the Almighty was there with a big box of keys and I could drive anything I want. And I said, nope, I got to go answer Ferrari guy from a couple weeks ago. So Ferrari guy, if you're listening, you commented.
You were invited on the show, friend. Ferrari guy.
You said we don't know anything invited. About cars. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I want to talk to that guy. So sorry, I can't die yet. I've got to get back to rambling about cars. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, viewers, I have to start the show with an apology. We said when we talked about the Ford Lightning that we would have a moratorium on Ford topics for a month. Apparently, I lied.
Damn
I didn't
it, Ford.
Mean to lie, but Ford went and they unveiled the Maverick, I believe either 3 to 4 weeks on the dot from when they unveiled the Lightning. And Smith and I, we talked about it and I initially pushed back because I wanted to stay true to my word, but we can't not talk about the Maverick.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that. I didn't really want to talk about it. But I mean,
it's really important.
It's really important. It's legit big news. And yeah, one of the things that we really feel like, not just we want to do, but sort of a duty here, when there's really big car news, you're listening to us and you're trusting us. We need to bring you the really big car news, even if it's more Ford news. So, and I mean, let's be honest, Bruce, a new small pickup truck with a blue oval badge, a new small pickup truck anywhere is pretty big news in the United States. But with Ford doing this, yeah, I mean, we have to talk about it.
So I was actually thinking about this while I was doing dishes tonight. And I think there is an argument to be made that the Maverick is more important than the Lightning.
I totally.
And the Lightning is obviously very important. It's Ford entering the electric truck market. That's going to be huge in the future. But the Maverick is a truly, truly affordable small truck for people that want one. It, you know, our former colleague, Steve Ewing, would get mad at us for saying that it starts at $20,000 because, yeah, the destination is $11,95 or something like that. But for the very, very low 20s, you can now get yourself a pickup truck that is a fairly decent pickup truck. It doesn't have F-150 or Ranger mm-hmm. levels of capability, but a lot of people don't need F-150 or Ranger capability. And it's finally here after decades of a lot of people in like our comment sections asking for it. And it's here. And I think that's a really big deal.
Well, I think it's bigger than that, though, because how many times have you heard me preach about, well, and a lot of people have heard me preach about Ford being completely short-sighted, putting all of its eggs in one basket, mm-hmm. basing everything that it's about on trucks and SUVs, not having anything on the lower end of the price range that's also good on gas. And now here we have a small truck. I mean, let's be honest. It's still not super entry level. I mean, just over 20, just over 20 grand.
The average car these days is what? 33K. So like, yeah, 20 something.
And how many people are going crazy into debt and even looking at bankruptcy just to afford a middle of the road car? I mean, prices are way up there. So, I mean, yeah, this is at the bottom of the scale. It's also a truck, which, hey, in America, people love trucks. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger deal here is Ford is claiming this will get 40 miles per gallon in the city. So when gasoline and oil prices go way back up to where it's just absolutely insane to even try to fill up an F-150, when the housing bubble pops, when the economy pops, it will happen eventually.
Of course.
Ford, at least now with the Maverick, has something that might save them. Am I stretching it there?
You're stretching it just barely. Like, but you're right that they have a truly attractive entry-level product that I don't think, just take it side by side. You have an EcoSport or you have a Maverick. I can't imagine the person that's going to buy an EcoSport when the Maverick is a couple of grand more. Like,
yeah, I mean, the price difference now, but here's another thing though. Here's another thing that we have to mention. Automakers always love to tout their starting price.
Sure.
But how many vehicles do they sell at that starting price?
Very few.
How many of these base model Ford Maverick XLs that are just front wheel drive, no options, no other equipment, at I think it's you know, 21 grand or so once destination is figured in. Mm-hmm. How many of those are they going to sell? How many are you even going to be able to go into a dealership and find? I bet that absolute base model truck will be something that you can only special order. But that said, you should still be able to go into a dealership and probably find what, a $25,000 XLT or so. I think that's about where the XLT is going to start.
Right. That's what I was just looking up. I believe that even like, you know, the nicer ones are still sub 30.
Yeah.
My numbers up here.
I mean, I give Ford credit for keeping the price down on this. I give Ford credit for coming out with the hybrid model is actually the base model. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think 191 horsepower. Is that correct, Bruce?
Well, here, let me give you pricing first.
Let's take a look at price and then we'll jump back.
Entry level is $19,995. This is all before destination for an XL. Mm-hmm. $22,280 for an XLT. And $25,490 for the Lariat, which is the range topping version right now.
Okay. So that's even a little bit better than I thought. Shame on me for not looking at your pricing article. I feel very bad for that. It's been a very busy few days for
us. You've been sick as a dog, so I'll give you some slack here.
The Maverick is stock standard with their hybrid powertrain. That's the 2.5 liter.
That's 191 horsepower.
Combined horsepower, 155 pound feet of torque. I mean, not a huge number, but like you said earlier, how many people really need the full capability of a full size pickup truck? I'm gonna probably ruffle some more feathers here, even more than I did with Supra. 90%. I'm pulling this percentage completely out of the sky. 90% of full size truck buyers do not use their truck anywhere near what they need in a full size vehicle. Not anywhere near. 90% of full size truck owners would use this Ford Maverick without any issue. And they would be paying a lot less. They would be paying a lot less at the pump, but it's not a full size truck. And it doesn't have a frame underneath it. It's a unibody.
Yeah.
That's my little rant there. If you want to step up to the Maverick all-wheel drive with the 2-liter turbo, that's 250 horsepower. That's the EcoBoost engine. I mean, we've seen that before, so no big deal there. That does get your tow rating up to 4,000 pounds. And I'll talk about this in a bit. That's the maximum you can tow with the Ford Maverick. When you have it equipped with the 2-liter turbo with the all-wheel drive, and you have to have a special tow package to get to the 4,000 pound range. So, I mean, that's pretty capable for a small truck, right?
And I'm looking at the pricing post that I wrote up earlier this week, yesterday, technically. The tow package is $745. Break the bank.
Like, yeah, that's not a big add-on.
No.
That's not a big add-on at all. So, yeah, I mean, bravo for Ford to bringing this out, for putting this out there. What I find interesting, and actually before we jump into this, We have so much information at MotorOne.com right now on the Ford Maverick. If there's anything that we don't talk about here, just seriously, MotorOne.com. I don't even know if you have to search for Maverick. There's probably something near the top of the news feed, but search for Maverick. We search have
comparison. Yeah, I think some of our features that we wrote are debut, kind of been moved down a little bit. So just go ahead and search for Maverick.
Yep. And of course, I mean, we'll drop links in our podcast post that goes up every Friday. So much there. I did the comparison with the Maverick and the Hyundai Santa Cruz, because let's be honest, it's the only other truck in this category right now in the United States.
Yep.
It's an obvious comparison. And we talked about the Santa Cruz. What was it, a few weeks back, Bruce?
Here on the podcast back now, I think.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Wow. Dude.
This year's going quick.
But it's going so quick. But I mean, obviously those comparisons are going to happen. So I was happy to dive
into the only other vehicle on the market that it competes with in the United States right now. Mm-hmm. So we have to compare them. There's no other comparison.
Right. You know, unless Ram, if you're listening, you have a Fiat that you can bring over pretty much as is and call it, you know, brand it your new entry level Ram. I think that'd be a cool matchup. But anyways,
if you want to listen to our Santa Cruz rambling about cars, that was on April 23rd. And that is April 16th, depending on how you want to find that. So either episode 16, April 23rd, if you want to hear everything about Santa Cruz. So,
OK, yeah, well, that wasn't too long ago. April 16th.
Over a month.
Yeah. OK. About almost 2 months. Anyways. Comparison. Ford, obviously. They were really, I mean, we'll be honest, they were really conservative with the styling on Maverick. And I mean, they can be. They're Ford. They don't have to come out and try to rock the boat with some sort of new pickup truck, because they already have that audience built in. So, I mean, and comparing looks, I hate comparing looks, because that's in the eye of the beholder, right? Mm-hmm. I personally dig the way the Santa Cruz looks better than Maverick, just because, you know what, we've seen it. We've seen it over and over again. Not that the Maverick's ugly. It's just kind of, yeah. What really got me, and I don't think I've heard anybody really talking about this yet. What do you always hear from Detroit automakers when they debut a new truck? You hear one of several things. Power. Best-in-class towing. Fork. Best-in-class power. Best-in-class cargo capability. They don't. Sometimes they'll talk about best in class fuel economy, but that's usually for a diesel, because I mean, even if they're saying best in class fuel economy, I mean, you might be looking at 20 miles per gallon. It's not really a double take. Those are staples. I mean, those aren't just talking points. Every time you hear a new truck from Detroit come out, they're touting one of those categories. Except now. 2022 Ford Maverick, the only competitor it has in its category is the Hyundai Santa Cruz. And guess what, folks? The Santa Cruz beats it for power. The Santa Cruz beats it for towing. The Santa Cruz beats it for cargo capability. The only thing that Maverick does is beat it for fuel economy. And isn't that kind of reversed? I mean, don't we usually see it the other way? Don't we usually see it the other way around?
Yep.
Let me go over the stats here. So maximum tow capability for Maverick all-wheel drive, 4,000 pounds. That's, you need the towing package. Santa Cruz, if you have the 2.5 liter turbo 4, you'll get 5,000 pounds of towing capability. If you have the Santa Cruz all-wheel drive with that turbo 4, 275 plus horsepower. They don't have a specific figure yet.
Right.
The most you get with Maverick, 250. And even in the torque department, Hyundai Santa Cruz all-wheel drive, they're saying 310 pound-feet plus. They don't have it finalized yet of torque. Maverick, 277. So, again, a win there. As far as cargo capability, it's really close. Ford maxes out at 1,500 pounds. Hyundai goes up to 1,748. It's such a weird number, but hey, it's more. So, I mean,
real quick, in the Ford's favor, not that I'm favoring one over the other, the Santa Cruz's bed is a bit smaller.
Yes.
You know, it's 4.3 feet long versus 4.5 feet long.
Well, you know, and but also it depends on where you measure it from, because if you have that built-in tonneau cover, it's only like 4 feet at the top.
Correct. You're right. For the Santa Cruz. Yep.
Yep. That is an area where pickup truck people are really going to favor the Maverick, because Ford, even they designed the bed in the Maverick. It's a 4.5 foot bed, but they designed it to where it's flat enough. They actually designed the wheel arches in the bed where you can fold down the tailgate, and the tailgate even has a multifunction little lip that kind of sits up. And they designed it so, okay, you can set a 4x8 sheet of plywood there in the back. The 4x8 sheet of plywood fits between the bed just fine. It sits on those flat spots on the wheel wells, and then it rests on that, on the tailgate. Of course, it's sticking way out the back. You better have a stinking orange flag on the back of your load, but still, you go down to the hardware store, you could throw a 4x8 sheet of plywood in the back. That's a big deal for people. That would be one area where I would say the full-size truck people legitimately use their vehicles to the max when you go and you can carry longer, kind of bulkier loads like that. And props to Ford. They've got the Maverick figured out to where you can do that. Whereas Hyundai, you've got your little plastic cover that you're putting over the tailgate so you can haul your mountain bike.
So that's the one thing there I don't know. And I think it's just going to matter person to person, family to family. I know in the family that I am from, they are very much gardeners, and being able to haul the mulch, the stone, the stuff like that, that's a much bigger deal than hauling plywood or drywall or stuff like that. So, you know, maybe that extra payload is going to put the Santa Cruz in their favor versus the Maverick. You know, they're not really going to care that there's a smaller space, that more the extra weight is the selling point. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy. Do you want more payload, less physical space, or more physical space but less actual payload?
Yeah, I mean, it shakes down interestingly. I can tell you from personal experience over the last year, I would rather have the space over the payload. Speaking as somebody that went a little crazy and built a sim racing cockpit out of a bunch of plywood last year when we were on lockdown, I really could have used space for some nice 4x8 sheets of plywood. And then I also just got a new bed after 17 years out of my old bed, trying to get rid of the queen bed with a queen size box spring. Yeah, the space would help. But at the same time, you have space in the Hyundai. It's not quite as convenient to use, but it's still an open space. I'm sure people can figure out a way.
Right. We're talking about less than a foot work. Here.
Yeah,
we're not talking about
if they have to. Right.
We're talking about a less than a foot in either dimension. People are going to figure it out. It's just, it's just an interesting dichotomy between them. Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at the interior, if you're catching us on YouTube, Bruce, I mean, I don't really know how I feel about the Maverick interior versus Hyundai. We're seeing the XLT. I think that's the XLT Lariat probably.
Yeah.
It's going to be the dressed up one. And,
I think that's the Lariat actually.
Hey, you know what? I mean, Ford does. I mean, they know how to do handsome interiors. But I mean, I kind of dig Hyundai's interior too. I actually thought that there were some notable similarity in just kind of the basic design.
So looking at them both, I think I personally prefer the Santa Cruz interior. I really like its digital instrument cluster and the way its infotainment system kind of incorporates. It's a little bit more avant-garde though, with kind of the weird trapezoid in the steering wheel at the lower section of the steering wheel. It's close. You know, it is what it is. So for anyone watching us on YouTube, you are looking at the Ford now, and I'm going to put up an image of the Santa Cruz now.
Oh, you got it? Okay.
I got it
queued up too. Okay.
Nope, I got it right here.
You're quicker on the draw than I am, man. You always are. This every time.
Well, here we go.
I think it's just a
matter of preference. I like the Santa Cruz better. But it just looks a little bit more high tech, and it's going to depend on the person. If you prefer more conventional look, you're probably going to like the Ford. If you want to go a little bit more avant-garde high tech, I think you're going to like the Hyundai better. But I don't think one is better than the other.
The steering wheel is a little awkward looking on the Hyundai, but it's not terrible.
It is. That's what I mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a toss up for me. I don't think I would be buying either one based on the interior, just because I think they're both similar enough to seal the deal for me.
Here,
I would be looking more for, well, I mean, let's be honest. And I think a lot of people will agree here. They're going to be looking more necessarily at price here. And we don't yet know what Hyundai is going to sell the Santa Cruz for. They haven't announced any pricing yet, have they? I don't think I've seen it anywhere.
Wait, here, real quick. Here are the two side by side for any of our YouTube viewers. Yep. Smith, you're looking at them. To me, it's a wash. Like, they both have their strengths and minuses. I prefer the Santa Cruz one a little bit more, but I could also totally understand why someone would like the Ford one more. It's a wash to me. You?
Ford, GM, Stellantis, aka Jeep and Dodge.
Yeah.
I like the shifter stalk. I don't like the little dial.
The Maverick has the dial. You can see it there at the bottom.
Selector.
I'm sorry.
I'm saying I don't like that. I would rather just have this same old basic stalk where I have the tactile feel. Okay. I don't have to look down to see, did I dial it here? Did I dial it there? I don't know if it makes me old fashioned, but I like having that stock, even if it's a small stock. The one in the Santa Cruz, it's kind of big, actually. I don't think it needs to be that big, but
what I like about the Maverick are the physical dials and buttons for the HVAC system. To me, that is a better implementation. I have not seen a good digital HVAC system control setup yet. Mm-hmm. So I prefer that in the Ford, but still, if you ask me for my preference, I take the Hyundai, but it's close. I
don't see anybody making or breaking their decision based on the interiors here.
It's going to be hard on that one.
It's going to come down to exterior, whether you like the conservative Ford look or the little more exciting Hyundai look. I don't think, even though Hyundai beats Ford at the truck game, if you will, with power and towing and cargo, I don't think it'll come down to that either, because they're still very similar. They're similar on all of those fronts. And I don't see anybody towing 4,000 or 5,000 pounds with either one of these vehicles, even if they're able. I don't see anybody doing that. I think it's going to come down to which one you like better in terms of looks and price. And on that, Hyundai, the ball's in your court. Maybe Hyundai's been holding themselves back to see what Ford's going to do with their Maverick. Now that Ford has shown its hand, and it's a pretty aggressive hand, if Hyundai is going to be competitive, I mean, it's going to have to start in the low 20s. How cool would it be if Hyundai could come in and actually, we'll say 18.9 plus destination and have it check in at like 19.995?
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it will either, but man, I would love to see Hyundai do it.
So we are pretty certain the Santa Cruz has a lot of relationship with the Tucson. Am I right there?
Yeah.
Okay. So I am looking at Tucson pricing right now. The new Tucson starts at $24,950. I think the Santa Cruz is going to be, plus or minus a grand from there. It's not going to be significantly more. It's not going to be significantly less. So based I don't know either. I'm guessing just like you are, but I'm just looking at what the information I have. I think you're going to end up, the base price of the Tucson's going to end up being a little bit more, but not significantly more than the Ford. I think they're both going to be in the 20s, but maybe you're going to end up paying $3,000 to $4,000 more for a Santa Cruz. My guess offhand.
I mean, I think if Hyundai can come in, say at 21 or 22, that might be a stretch. Well, here's another theory. Okay, so they come in at 23.
Okay, I would believe that.
They come in at 23 for the base model, but what's the most expensive Ford Maverick? Because their configurator is already up. Isn't it over 40 grand?
And I wrote that post, and I will explain to you that, yes, the most expensive Maverick is $42,835. But Ford's configurator has a ton of accessories on it. And I can't imagine a buyer that is going to pick every humanly possible accessory to put on that truck like we did. Yes,
they're not going to pick the $200 valve stem caps or, you know, the crazy things that they offer like that.
So here, just real quick, here is what you can do to the bed and just kind of add this up in your mind. You can get a $300 bed divider kit. You can get a $370 bed extender. You can buy a $180 bed liner tray, $200 for bed lighting, $70 for a bed net for your stuff. There's a $280 toolbox that you can mount to the driver or passenger side. There's a soft folding tonneau cover. There's a hard folding tonneau cover, or there's a hard roll-up tonneau cover, the last two of which are $1,160. I can't imagine the person that's going to buy all that.
Right.
That person doesn't exist. So right. Yes, technically, can you get a $40,000 Maverick? Yes. If you just tick everything, no one's going
to
do that. No,
nobody's going to do that. But the point I wanted to make on that is kind of going back to what I said earlier. It may start at 21 grand after destination. Who's going to buy that truck? Very few people are going to buy that right. truck. Most yep, of the I agree people with that. Are probably going to be in the mid 20s to
I'd say high 20s,
mid to high 20s, low 30 yeah. range. Yeah. So that's really where Hyundai needs to be looking at a price comparison. So even if they start at 23, if they have a comparable model, say you can upgrade to their 2.5 turbo, which, by the way, also comes with the 8-speed dual clutch transmission. I still think that with all wheel drive, that would be a cool ass little street truck.
Yeah.
If they can bring that in cheaper, then you can get an all wheel drive 2-liter EcoBoost. All-wheel drive Maverick, you know what? Maybe the win is right there. Maybe Hyundai doesn't need to come in and undercut Ford on their base model vehicle because the volume is going to be higher up the chain.
Yeah. And as we're talking about this, what immediately comes to my mind is that whoever wins or loses on a corporate side doesn't matter. Consumers are the ones that are winning mm-hmm. because for the first time in ages, there are legit small trucks that are good, that have capability that most people could use that, you know, just it's a really great time for people that just want a small truck that has not existed for decades.
I know a few people that are clinging to their small Rangers like their Gold just because, and I mean, the Ranger was all right. I never felt like it set any sort of gold standard for a small truck or any vehicle, but
the Tacoma or, you know, whatever the yeah. Hilux or whatever you want to call it was always kind of a better truck, but way more expensive.
But just having the smaller vehicle that still has the capability.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're finally getting back to that segment. It'll be interesting to see how the segment grows, if it mm-hmm. grows, because at least before with the previous small trucks, the Ranger, the S10, I mean, those were still, I guess you would say, proper trucks. They were still body on frame, rear wheel drive with optional four wheel drive. It's an important distinction to make here because the Maverick, I mean, it's
and the Santa Cruz
and the Santa Cruz, they're both unibody. They're both unibody design that are front wheel drive and basic trim. That's not a typical truck format. And the all wheel drive systems, those aren't your typical four wheel drive systems. Those are going to be more of the kind of the street based all wheel drive. So you're not going to take your Maverick even with all wheel drive and go to Moab. I mean, people might try. Right.
Although, I mean, we've seen Bronco Sports at yeah. Moab that are doing that's okay. True, it's the same platform, which means
that's true.
The all-wheel drive is probably similar. So,
no, that's true. Maybe I should eat a little crow there.
I'm not saying that. For a lot of people, I think the capability might be there. You know, if you live in Alaska or if you live somewhere really, really in the wilderness, no, this probably isn't the truck for you. But if you live in the suburbs. That all-wheel drive system is probably everything you're ever going to need.
Well, I mean, I'll say this much. I'm not a truck guy. I'm sure listeners have heard me say that many times. I have owned two full-size trucks, so I'm not saying this without having any experience. And actually, I liked the F-250 diesel that I had. I didn't like it at the time just because it kept breaking down. But I guess with rose-colored glasses, I thought it was kind of neat. But I've never been a fan of the ride. I've never been a fan of the size. I'm always kind of practical in that. I want a vehicle that I'm at least using mostly how it should be used. The Maverick and the Santa Cruz really interest me. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting an exclamation mark on that because I still have my 2004 Mazda 6 V6 hatch that has been extraordinarily practical for me over the years. And it's been extraordinarily reliable, except
so very recently,
except for the past probably 8 months or so, where, I mean, it's only got 109,000 miles, but it's, I mean, it's got a misfire, a slight misfire now that's not strong enough to set a check engine light. So, OK, I don't exactly know where that's at. The suspension is starting to get worn out. It's got a pretty good oil leak. This is after already fixing a bunch of stuff over the last year. So I'm kind of at the point I've been ho-humming on getting a new car. I'm at the point now where it's like, I'm kind of tired of this. I can afford something new. Let's go get it. These two trucks really interest me. I'm interested to see how many other people that wouldn't ordinarily be looking at a truck are now interested in either Maverick or Santa Cruz.
I agree. So I want to follow up your anecdote with an anecdote of my own.
Uh-oh.
So just this past, not last weekend, weekend before last, I got to see my parents for the first time in a while because of, you know, COVID mm-hmm. and vaccinations, stuff like that. And naturally, because I write about cars, we were visiting an uncle of mine who's restoring a car. Like, we're all car people. Cars got brought up. And my dad said that my mom asked him, she had read about the Santa Cruz and also the Lightning and said, how come we've never owned a pickup truck? Because they were always SUV people. They had a Cherokee and a Wrangler. And my mom had a 95 Mustang and a Saab. And she drives a Cadillac CTS now. Like, they've never driven. She likes, you know, vague performance luxury, but not really a pickup. But the Santa Cruz really grabbed her. She's been asking me over and over again, how much does a Santa Cruz cost? And the Lightning really grabbed her because the idea of being able to plug stuff in, especially, like, you know, they live in an area where a power outage happens every, you know, couple times a summer, three times mm-hmm. a summer. But being able to, you know, oh, they don't have a generator, but they could plug the truck in, that would be kind of attractive to them. Like, the way that the truck market is moving, it's attracting someone who I never expected to want a truck, i.e. my mother. So it's a really interesting time. It's a really exciting time.
It really is. Well, I mean, didn't we just see that Ford is now building more Mustang Mach-Es than regular Mustangs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the argument could be made there still that, well, it's not really a Mustang. You know, that's why they're selling more, because it's a practical vehicle versus Mustang is a niche vehicle. But hey, it still comes down to that's sort of a sporty kind of performance vehicle. Yeah. Interesting times, man. Interesting times. How interesting are they? Email us a podcast at motorone.com. Also, hey, email us. Tell us what you think on Maverick and Santa Cruz and this whole small truck thing. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about a small truck now where you weren't thinking about a truck before? We'd love to do a little poll and see what our listeners think on that.
Yeah, I would really love to know if, like, were you thinking about getting a smallish crossover, a CRV, you know, a smallish crossover, but now you're looking at the Maverick and you're like, oh, maybe I could do that instead. Maybe that would work for me. Let us know. I would legitimately be curious to know people's feelings on that.
Yeah. I mean, we always love to hear from people. We always love to read the comments, even sometimes when the comments are a little spicy. Bruce, I wasn't on the podcast last week, but I did listen because, come on, this is the best automotive podcast.
Well, your show too.
It's the best automotive podcast you can get. It's even better when I'm not on it.
No, it's so, better when you're on.
So anyway. I had to listen. And I know you, we're going to jump back a couple of weeks because we talked mm-hmm. about cars that we thought were overrated, cars that we thought were underrated. And I think the A80 Supra is overrated. And
you stirred up a hornet's nest. Like, that was all of the comments that people were saying, that you were only saying that to, like, get views for us, to, like, stir up controversy. People claimed, like, you were just,
you know what that means?
Person saying that.
But you know what that means?
Tell me.
It means I'm absolutely right. Because, I mean, we started off that podcast by saying feelings were going to be hurt, and some feelings were hurt. Hey, if I'm an idiot because I don't like the A80 Supra, or if I'm dumb because I'm just stirring up controversy, hey, look at the A80 Supra. It's got that dumb smiling face with those ridiculously oversized headlights. It has that ridiculous St. Louis Arch spoiler that for the younger people that think the Supra is great, but don't remember it from the 90s, people didn't really like that wing in the 90s when it came out. It was kind of like, wow, Toyota, what did you do to the Supra? Why are you putting this huge wing on there? It's got the 2JZ engine. People know the 2JZ engine. They love the 2JZ engine.
It's a great engine. The engine is fantastic.
It's a fantastic engine. I'd say I'd put it in one of the top engines of all time. There are so many engines you can put on that list. It certainly deserves to be there. And for the record also, I don't hate the Supra. I'm not a big fan of the A80. But as a performance car in the 90s, especially when Mustang GTs were at like 220, 230 horsepower on a good day stock, and the Supra was at what, like 330 stock? I mean, it was a properly brutish muscle car.
It also cost twice as much as a Supra, or as a Mustang, sorry.
It was also very expensive, and because it was a muscle car, I mean, it handled all right, but it wasn't what you would expect a Japanese sports car to be. So, I mean, those were my big gripes. I think Toyota did just terrible on the styling. I think that it could have been dialed in a little bit better for handling, not just brute power. There's more to life than the 2JZ.
Can I poke the hornet's nest here just off the top of my head? I've got a question for you.
Okay, you've got a question for me. Okay, go ahead.
So lined up right next to each other, you have got twin turbo Supra, Lexus SC400, which in case the 400 is the one with the V8 engine out of the LS and everything. You could pick one.
Honestly, I would take the Lexus. I just the Lexus looks better. I mean
they're the same platform.
I mean like I said, I don't really have a problem with the Supra. I just don't think it is the end all be all that frankly a lot of people make it out to be, just based on its appearance in the Fast and the Furious. I mean we were kind of talking about it in that episode. Jason Hudson, I'm gonna call you out a little bit, and I'm using your name on here. Usually we stay anonymous, but Jason,
we don't use last names usually, so you better be nice. At least you have a reason.
Well, when you post a public comment on a public forum, they are bashing the Mark IV Supra just for the controversy of it. They are morons. We're morons. Come on. People listen to the podcast. Of course we're morons. But you know what? Sometimes we're also right. And, you know, I mean, hey, Jason, you love the Supra, dude. That's awesome. I'm not interested in trashing on anybody. I'm not going to call you a moron. You love the Supra. There are some cars that I love that people just don't get. That's not what being a car person is about. You love your car stuff. We love our car stuff. I am legit sorry that we don't see eye to eye on the Supra, but I want to thank you for commenting. And I want you to say, don't worry about all the people who also bashed your comment on our YouTube video. Don't listen to them, even though they might have been agreeing with me that the Supra is that the A80 is kind of ugly. Don't listen to them, man. Keep on with your super love. Keep preaching it. Keep listening. Keep commenting. And the same for Ferrari guy. In fact, Ferrari guy made a comment on our post. Guys that know nothing about cars talking about cars. I mean that's.
I had a much harsher response to the Ferrari guy that I suggested to you, and you very kindly said, "I think I'll take this one." But so, it could have been worse, bud.
Dude, it's a troll comment. I mean, we're in the business. We know what this stuff's about.
I know.
Ferrari guy. I mean, I was legit. Invited you on the show. Hey, come on.
Yeah, totally. If you want to come on the show, you're welcome.
Seriously, we're rambling about cars. School us with your knowledge. I've only owned like 34 cars, wrenched on most of them. Been wrenching this week, even in 95 degree heat, because the damn windows. This has been like the story of my life for the past 3 weeks. It's like one thing breaks, then another thing breaks. then I get super sick, and then my wife is super sick at the same time. And oh, okay, now here comes a heat wave. None of the air conditioners are in the house. Have you ever been stuck in a house where two people are sick and it's 95 degrees outside, also, and you're too sick to put the air conditioner in the window?
Your main bed was screwed up because you had bought a new bed, so the old bed was like not the bedroom. So
we bought a new bed, and we were having trouble getting. We wanted a new platform for the bed. So we had the bed delivered. The bed was delivered on Tuesday, right in the middle when my wife was sick. I wasn't sick at that point yet, but I was like, should we delay this? I got sick the next day, and the bedroom was torn apart. I mean, we were just camping it in the house, but we didn't have any super comfortable place to be sick in. And we had to delay putting up the bed because we were waiting for the frame to show up. So, yeah. And then I'm driving the Mustang. The Mustang has awesomely cold air conditioning, but I left the top down over the weekend. And sometimes I just leave it down because I'm not driving it all the time. So I left
the
top
down. You said it was in the 90s there, so that's fine.
Well, but then I got sick, so I didn't drive it for a few more days. And apparently those 25-year-old rear windows have some dead spots on them. So I finally go to drive. It's like, oh, I just need to turn the air on. And the rear window, one rear window won't go up. I drive over some rough railroad tracks figuring, okay, I'll just shake the hell out of the car. That window goes up. I get to the house. The other one won't work now. So I tear the back seat apart, everything. I spend like an hour tearing all the trim out just so I can tap on the motor for 5 seconds and it goes right up. It's like damn you. So I do all that. It's like, okay, hey, it's super hot out here. I just want to have the air on when I'm out driving. So I go out, turn on the air. It does not come on.
Oh, I hadn't heard that part of the story. Okay.
Yeah, that's the new part. So that's what I'm doing this weekend. Anyways, thank you, commenters.
See, Ferrari guy, this is why you need to talk to us.
This is why you need to talk to us. So you can help me diagnose the air conditioning issue on the Mustang. And I know the problem. I know exactly what you're going to say the problem is. The problem is that stupid blue oval on the grill that messes everything up all the time. I know what I'm going to do is take that blue oval off and I'm going to get a little square yellow prancing horse. And that may or may not fix the air conditioning, but guarantee
all the bills will be four times more expensive.
The bills will be four times more expensive. And like next month, I'll have to do a timing service where that's the engine will have to come out of the car. Anyways, thank you for commenting. And you know, can I segue just briefly before we get into our next segment?
Yeah.
Since we're talking about supers here, you guys, you and Anthony, refresh us really quick on the other commenter that we had that was asking about the million dollar challenge, if you will.
I don't have his email pulled up at the moment, but yeah, he asked us. He was very nice. He was effusive. He said how much he liked the show, and he just wanted to know if we had $1 million given to us and we could only buy cars with that money, what would we buy?
This is one of them. Forget your A80 Supra. Look at this A70.
Yeah, that's a good looking car.
I mean, putting that side by side with an A80, the proportions. It's an 80s
wedge shape. That was the thing at the time.
Yeah. It was the thing at the time, but I mean, it still looks sleek and great today, especially with a removable top. Mm-hmm. The proportions were right. You had a 1JZ, I think, for those in Japan that was the big engine to get. But in the United States, I mean, we still had the 7M GTE. Am I getting that right, Toyota people? The 7M GTE, I think.
So I think that was you could get a turbo as well. Might be the 1JZ, and then the naturally aspirated is the M series. Because the M series was what it was in the 3000 GT. Which is why it was so famous.
But I mean, still the inline six turbo, that was about 230 horsepower. I don't care that it doesn't have a 2JZ under the hood. I don't care that it doesn't have 600 horsepower. I don't care that it doesn't have 330. That car with 230 horsepower, I would take the roof out. I would shift 5 speeds. I would have glorious fun all day long in that car. I would feel good about myself because it didn't look like a freaking cartoon. And I would have gobs of money left over because while people are losing their mind over A80s right now for no real apparent reason other than hype, I can go buy an A70 like that in really nice shape for what, about probably like 10 or 15 grand. And that might even be on the high side.
It depends on where you live. Yeah. Like
I think these are starting to come up now.
They are. Yes.
But I mean, that's one of my $1 million challenges. I don't think I'm going to have time today because we got some Land Rover stuff to talk about.
We do. But wait one second, because I'm now looking at the numbers. So you are right. Actually, I was wrong. In the U.S., they only got the M family of engines. So you either got a naturally aspirated 7M GE or the turbo was the 7M GTE engines in the United States. In Japan, there was the 1JZ. But okay. That was not a U.S. spec engine. So, yeah.
Okay. So see, Jason, I'm not a moron. I know Toyota stuff. I'm just not buying into the A80, man. That's all. So hopefully you're listening. Drop us a comment on what do you think of the A70, man? What does everybody think of the A70?
I love A70 cars, so you're not going to get any bad words from me. Like,
shouldn't the A70 be a little bit higher up on the rung here than the A80? Just because the A80 had a little bit more horsepower, it doesn't mean the A70 is more deserving. Before we go on to our next segment, I will complete in one fell swoop my $1 million garage challenge.
Okay.
And that is going to be with a car that could be the most beautiful, elegant, seductive, delicious car of all time.
You're going to push like a Mustang 2 or something.
I present the 1936 Auburn Boattail Speedster. Come on. There is not a place in the world where you could drive up in that and you would not be the instant rock star of everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a time not too long ago where those cars were still, I mean, 150, 200 grand. That's nothing.
Oh, no, they were more. That's the interesting thing about those pre-war cars is that they've gone up. And now the fact that so few people kind of know about them, that the prices are falling.
No, not on these. Oh, okay. That was my initial thought, because the last time I checked, it had been a couple of years ago. I guess maybe a little bit longer, but you know, I thought, okay, I can get one of these and a few other cars. No, an original Auburn boat tail like this is $1 million. You're going to pay. I mean, maybe you can get one for 800. Maybe you can get one for 9. Maybe it goes for 1.2, 1.4, but you're looking at $1 million car right there. So there's my $1 million challenge.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, it is. Oh, I've always loved that car. The big straight 8. I mean, at the time, that was supercharged. Mm-hmm. I don't know how fast they were. But, I mean, this is at a time where there still weren't many roads with pavement.
Right.
I mean, this is how long ago we're talking. And this is a car that could top 100 miles an hour. It's just – there's just nothing else like it when you see it on the road. The only other thing I'll say here, instead of that car, I could get an Auburn – Boattail replica and have like 95% of the look. It's never going to be super exact for probably about 50 or 60 grand, in which case I then created just the most crazy list of pop culture cars, 80s cars. I had a Murcielago in there because I always love the Murcielago. You got to have
Murcielago a V12. Like $150, $200.
Oh yeah. I had a few cars. I had a couple cars in there. They were like 200, 400,000.
Yeah, but if you got a million, like,
that's... I got a million, right? So,
right.
You know, what else did I have in there? Ferrari 328. I love the 308, but the 328's got a little bit more power.
Yeah,
and you can get those for just under 100 grand. Mm-hmm. Ferrari 575. I've always loved just that long front engine V12 Ferrari. Those are, I think, running right around 100 grand. And then from there, it's just like this ridiculous list of $10,000 80s cars. I would have the ultimate 80s collection.
Oh,
Dodge,
totally.
Dodge Daytona Turbo Z. Oh, you can get one of those mint condition for like 10 grand. Mm-hmm. The Z31 300ZX, just Turbo Coupe Thunderbirds.
Oh, great.
Honda S2000. I got to have the S2000 in there. We'll cover it a different time, but I love that you guys did that. I'm jealous that I didn't get to be a part of it. We need to talk about the Toyota Land Cruiser.
We do, because a new Toyota Land Cruiser is here. It's not necessarily here for us as in the folks in the United States. By all accounts, Toyota is killing the Land Cruiser name here. and I say that with a lot of hesitation, and I hope you can hear that in my voice, because I'm not 1,000% convinced. I wonder, maybe we are not going to get this iteration of the Land Cruiser. Well, you know, we'll probably get it as the new Lexus LX or Lexus whatever. But I would just be shocked that Toyota would give up on the Land Cruiser name in the U.S. for reasons that we'll get into as we go into this conversation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, new Toyota Land Cruiser just debuted kind of a little bit earlier than we expected today. In terms of power, it's no longer V8 powered. You either get a twin turbo 3.5 liter V6 that makes 409 horsepower, or you get a 3.3 liter twin turbo turbo diesel that makes 305 horsepower and 516 pound feet of torque. It's riding on a new frame. It apparently drops like 416 pounds over the old one. You know, it's a little bit lighter, but it's still just a big, rugged SUV that, you know, to put it into perspective, the Land Cruiser is kind of Toyota's Suburban in a certain way, but a Suburban that you could take off road and have no issue ever with it. Is kind of the best way I could express it.
I mean, I know you can, and I've seen the videos, and the videos always just floor me as to how you can do that with a Land Cruiser. I mean, Toyota certainly has, they have a little bit of pixie dust, I think, mixed in there to make the Land Cruiser something that big, be able to do the things that it does. But still, with the lower side skirts. Well, I mean, this is really, I mean, yes, it's off-road capable, but I mean, it's really become just a straight up tremendously luxurious full-size SUV.
It has, but you know, it's still body on frame. They have been developing this vehicle literally for decades. Like the fact is that, you know, non-government organizations, NGOs all around the world, they use Toyota Land Cruisers to get around. Mm-hmm. There are lots of armored versions of the Toyota Land Cruiser. Like it is known, especially outside of the United States, as kind of the rough and tumble SUV that you get. And for any of our YouTube watchers right now, we are looking at the new range, and the one on the far right is the GR version, which you can see has a completely different grill layout than the other ones. And God damn, is that car sexy.
I think it looks really good.
It looks so good with that Toyota. Like they're kind of sort of ripping off Ford with that big Toyota in the grill, but it looks so good. It's just this big boxy beast of an SUV.
Well, I mean, Land Cruisers of old, I mean, they used to carry some pretty big branding up front like that, didn't they?
So I've been looking around. They really haven't. I was kind of looking up some Land Rover history today, and I'm curious to ask you this. Do you know when the Land Cruiser was introduced to the United States?
Was it 1950?
No, you're close, but not quite.
Close? Okay.
It was
I know it goes back that far.
It was in 19. So Toyota in the U.S. opened in 1957 in October 31st. So their first full years of sales was 1958. They sold one Land Cruiser.
Okay. Wow.
But they also only sold 287 other cars. Yeah. So it's not like
they were new to the game.
They were new to the game in 1957, 1958. And that model was called that was the 20 series, kind of the FJ20, if you will. In 1960, that's when the FJ40, which is kind of, if you think about an old school Land Cruiser, that's the one that existed.
That's what pops in my head.
Yeah. So I only found this out when my grandmother died, but my uncle had an FJ40 because my aunt, she went through like a lot of his stuff and was like pulling out pictures and stuff. And he had one, obviously later than 1960. I think his was in the mid 70s or so. But, you know, that was for a while, for several years, that was Toyota's best-selling vehicle in the United States. I'm looking actually at the numbers now. The FJ40 from 1960 to 1965 was Toyota's best-selling vehicle in the United States. And after that, the Corona passenger car took over. So for 5 years in the early 60s, if you ask someone, what's a Toyota look like? It's an FJ40, you know, which you wouldn't think about today. Because, A, I've always lived on the East Coast. They were very much a West Coast car, like, just because that's where Toyota dealers were. That's where they were kind of dropped off. So, you know.
But it was a very different vehicle back then than it is today, isn't it?
Yes.
We're taking a look at an older Land Cruiser here right now. There's it's not huge Toyota branding, but there's some Toyota branding going on up there in the grill.
There's a little
that new GR. I mean, can you say maybe it has a little bit of a retro feel? No,
I don't know if it's retro. No, that's more of an FJ Cruiser thing. The FJ Cruiser was retro, and
it's not retro at all. But I mean. When I think Toyota Land Cruiser, this is still what pops into my head. And I know there have been many, many variations over the years. And I know the most recent one here in the United States, let's be honest. I mean, that's why Toyota isn't going to sell the new one here, because right now the Toyota Land Cruiser is like an $85,000 SUV. I mean, that's...
Right. And they sell a couple of thousand every year. The sales are incredibly low.
They're not selling that many. And when Toyota has a luxury division called Lexus,
right?
I mean, that's why it's to me, I mean, it's pretty much guaranteed. We'll at least get this as a Lexus, where maybe that price tag is a little bit more befitting. And I don't know if it'll bring more sales, but hey, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Right.
So let me pull while we're talking about this, let me pull this story up that we ran a little bit ago. There's a rumor that Lexus is planning to do a halo off-road SUV. And after seeing this new Land Cruiser, I wonder if those two projects aren't somehow related. That Lexus would do, you know, this super crazy off-roader, and it would basically be the ultimate Land Cruiser for the United States.
How did I miss this rumor?
You know what? Let vamp for me for just a second while I look it up, because I know I'm the one that wrote it up.
I mean, I know I've been sick here for. I mean, I was only sick for I was sick for like a day or two, but it really kind of kicked my butt for about a week. But I don't remember hearing anything about this. Are we talking recent, or are we talking, you know, like a few months ago? I mean, admittedly, writing four or five news articles a day, things kind of blend together pretty quick. Maybe I do remember something about it now. I mean, I would love to see some sort of halo off-roader, like a Land Cruiser of old that was just out to conquer Wranglers and Broncos.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be, is going to be more of the Lexus G class, for lack of a better describer. So, as you can see, so for anyone not watching on YouTube, the headline of this story is Lexus dealers say new three-row crossover, off-road SUV, and EV are coming. And this is from February of 2021. So this
year, I remember this now that I see it.
But yeah, so this year, but you know, whatever. And basically, one of the people involved says that Lexus is working on a rugged off-road vehicle. They're saying it's going to be a low-volume halo vehicle, and that it's vastly different from what people usually expect from a Lexus. And I wonder if Lexus isn't going to take this new Land Cruiser and basically add everything that they can to it, that's available. They'll sell it for a six-figure price. You know, very few will get made, but it will be kind of Lexus's halo vehicle that says, here, we can build an off-roader too.
The trouble that I have with that, are Lexus buyers interested in off-road?
Probably not. Lexus buyers aren't, but I wonder if they think that they can get enough conquest buyers out there,
pull in somebody that might maybe go for a Range Rover or something.
Exactly. And this is another story. Lexus could launch luxurious body on frame off-roader that's separate from the LX. Anthony wrote this, and that was in January. So only a month previous to that other February report that we put up. So there does seem to be some kind of thing that while we might not see this vehicle in the U.S. as a Land Cruiser, we could see it as a super rugged off-road Lexus, just as kind of them putting their stake in the ground saying, hey, we can do this too. You know, you might not think of Mercedes-Benz as building rugged vehicles, but they have the G-Class. We can build something like that too.
Yeah, but the G-Class has been established for a long time. They already have an audience built in.
Sure.
Range Rover, that they already have an audience built in. I can see Lexus wanting to try, and I can see Lexus thinking, okay, if everybody else is doing this, you know, maybe we should try. But man, if they do it, I don't think it'll work. I don't think it'll work. I just don't think the Lexus audience cares enough about that. And the audience that is interested in something like that, they're going to put their money where they already know what they're going to get. They're already going to go for G-Class. They're already going to go for Range Rover. It feels like Lexus may be trying to take a stab at an area that's just not their market, you know?
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe that's exactly what will happen. I'm happy to see it, though. You know, the more the merrier.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to see more of this GR Land Cruiser.
Yeah. God, that's a good looking car.
It's amazing how big of a difference you can make. It's not necessarily some minor changes, but I mean, you've got the Toyota branding up front. Do you have details on what else makes this a little different?
You know,
I know I'm putting you on the spot. I went over the debut post here earlier. Yeah, today.
I don't think we know specifically yet.
This was a little odd. Can I take just a brief minute for what were you thinking?
Yeah, we're rambling about cars. Let's do it.
We're rambling about cars. Okay. This will be a little bit of inside baseball, but it affects everybody because we're talking about flow of information. So, as is often the case, there are embargoes that we'll get from automakers. Hey, don't talk about this until X amount of time when information is released.
Yep. Totally normal.
With the Land Cruiser not coming to the United States, I mean, obviously people are still interested to read about it in the United States. And Motor One, we also have a very wide ranging audience all around the globe. So we're obviously thirsty for information. We want to have this information available as soon as embargo lifts. So fortunately, we had everything written up, ready to go. We had the information, but as Bruce was saying, there's still a lot of information that needs to filter out, and maybe that will change depending on various locations. But 2 hours before the embargo was supposed to lift, we get an email from Toyota.
Not just an email, like their official press release.
Yeah,
official
announcement from Toyota. 2 hours before the embargo of, hey, we're announcing the new Land Cruiser. And it's like, okay, you know, what's going on here? And we had heard that Toyota was still wanting people to follow the embargo. And it's like,
in some regions, not necessarily us, but in other places around the world that we have additions in, they're like, no, don't publish that. But we're like,
things like this happen from time to time. Automakers will have information that they want embargoed in certain areas, but not others. Mm-hmm. And it's just the way they want to control that information is just absurd. It's absolutely absurd. If you are going to send out and make public official information, that's it. It's out there. It's out there for the entire world. So that was a little bit of what we ran into today. It's like, okay, Toyota, I mean, we're doing exactly what you wanted us to do, but now you want to be the source of this information that normal people aren't going to be able to get because they're looking to outlets like us to tell them what's going on. Anyways, Toyota, what were you thinking?
Automakers, it was a weird decision on Toyota's part, and we're
and automakers, if you have information, okay, if you have information that you are wanting to share, understand that once you share it, it's there.
I would put it a different way. Understand that the internet is a global thing, and understand that if you put out information on your English language and Japanese language websites, that people from all over the world could conceivably access that information, and that there is no sense on putting that information under embargo in another language's language.
So that makes sense. So, I mean, in short, decide when you want to tell the world about your big announcement and then make the big announcement.
Yeah.
It's really simple.
But don't say English language speaking people can know about it this time.
Yeah.
This is totally hypothetical. Italian speaking people can know about it at this time. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense. That's not the way the internet works.
Yeah. Stop threading the needle. It's not 1962. Right. We are a global community. We are a global economy. You can't uninvent that unless you take away all of our toys, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. So right. Toyota, what were you thinking? Now, yeah, Toyota,
it's the baby. What were you thinking? Like, you,
it's the baby,
you
the baby. What were you stuff. Thinking?
This isn't like a major one, but
we're happy. We're dumb. Happy that you have this new Land Cruiser. We're happy. We're really happy. And we want to know more about the GR version here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have one, give Smith and I the keys to one, because we would love to drive one.
I mean, I'm not remotely located in any region where there could be some epic off-roading trails with some of the most fantastic views in the entire world. I mean, I'm nowhere near stuff like that.
Nope.
Not in the Black Hills of South Dakota with 1, 2, 3 national parks like 2 hours away from me.
No, those would be terrible places to drive an off-roading vehicle. Can't do
Bruce, I mean, you're a bigger Land Cruiser fan than I am.
So I have to be honest with you. My Land Cruiser experiences are very small. My wife, a coworker of my wife, her husband had one, and I got to ride in it once, and I fell in love with it. And his was like an early 90s example, like a 92 mm-hmm. or 93. The other experience I had in one was just a couple of years ago, but it was even shorter. It was a ride in one from Cobo Hall in Detroit to the hotel I was staying at in Detroit. So it was maybe a 15-minute ride. But I just... there's something to me that I really like about Toyota kind of pushing the limits of, and this is true of any automaker. I like an automaker who pushes the limits in terms of what people can do with a vehicle, what people want from a vehicle, whether that's a supercar or an SUV or a commuter car or whatever. And to me, the Land Cruiser really does that, and that makes it attractive to me. Thanks. That's what I got, bud.
No arguments here. No arguments here. We're going to be standing by for more information from Toyota on this.
Yeah.
And when that comes up, MotorOne.com, we have our teeth into everything. We have branches all around the world, so we're constantly sharing information. And we appreciate you coming along for the ride, both at MotorOne.com and at Rambling About Cars. Bruce, do we want to actually tell people here at the end of this episode a little bit of change that's happening on YouTube?
We do, but you know what? This just popped into my head. I'm going to do this and then I'll do that.
Okay.
Just real quick. Hey, Toyota, bring us a Bronco / a Wrangler competitor. Bring us a true FJ Cruiser, a baby FJ. So a baby Land Cruiser. Like, that'd be fantastic. Just do that. But yeah, anyway. So back to what you were talking about.
Right.
To anyone who watches this on YouTube, we have a new channel. We are no longer going to be on the Motor One main channel. We are going to be on a new channel called Motor One Podcasts. And again,
all for us,
all for any future podcast that ends up happening. I'm not saying anything's actually happening, but you know, maybe we're going to do a trucks podcast one day, maybe whatever. All Motor One podcasts will be at the Motor One Podcast channel.
And that's exactly what it is. I think youtube.com/MotorOnePodcasts.
As far as I know, that is what the URL is going to be.
But we'll make sure we have links in the video. We'll make sure there are links at MotorOne.com. And you will still be able to see something, at least for a little while, on the main YouTube channel.
Right.
Advertising the new channel. That's very important. The takeaway, we're growing. Motor One is growing like crazy. Mm-hmm. So here's where we really need your help. We want to make sure that the new Motor One podcast channel gets out there to everybody. So go to the channel. You'll be able to see all of the past episodes of Rambling About Cars as well. I believe they're going to take over all of the old Motor One podcasts before it was Rambling About Cars. Don't quote me on that. Quote me on that just yet. It's an active situation,
right?
But point certainly being,
all of the podcasts that you have seen with Smith and I that have been recorded and been on YouTube, they are still going to be on YouTube. They're just going to be on Motor One podcast rather than the Motor One channel. And to make it explicitly clear, this only affects the YouTube channel. If you are listening to us in any audio way, that doesn't change at all. Just keep listening. We appreciate you. It doesn't change. It's only Spotify, the video version of this show.
Spotify, Apple. I think those are the two primary.
Those are the primary ones that we are on other stuff too. Yeah. But
anywhere else you're listening, we're still going to be there, and we still appreciate you coming along for the ride. Even Ferrari guy and Jason. Yes.
Exactly.
What else we got, man?
No, I think that's it. But yeah, again, I need to just make it explicitly clear. If you are watching us on YouTube, we are moving to Motor One Podcast. If you are listening to us in any other way, this change does not affect you at all.
Right.
It's just a channel change. That's it. Yep. But otherwise, as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to be listening to us, we really appreciate it. We love hearing your comments. We love hearing your criticism. We love getting your support. We love getting your emails. Whatever it is, we honestly love this because Smith and I, we do this purely out of our passion for just sitting down on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night and talking about cars. Like, I want people to think of this as when you and your buddy are sitting out in the garage, drinking a few beers and talking about cars. That's what this show is supposed to be. You know, maybe it's, you know, guys who are writing about news every day, automotive news, but it shouldn't be more formal than that. It just should be us sitting here just BSing about cars. And that's what we want. And we appreciate all of you that come along. So, yeah.
Take
Smith,
care.
Is there anything more to say?
You know what? If you want to catch us on social media, I'm at CH Redding on Twitter.
I'm Chris Bruce, 1985 on Twitter.
And I need to get a little bit more active on Twitter. So if you want to follow me, I'm going to start putting up some... You know what? I'm going to start this week. I'm going to start posting up some of the random photos of some of the cars I've owned over the years. So,
I'll be able to see that.
At CH Writing, you've heard me talk about my eclectic car history. I'm actually not kidding when I say I've owned, I think, 33 or 34 cars. For a while, I was just going like every 6 to 8 months. It's like it's an addiction, man. It's just a cheap car addiction. I would love to find these cheap cars that you could buy for $500, $600, $700. They were running and driving, but maybe they needed some love. You put two brand new cars on a dealership lot. They're identical. You take those same two cars, separate them by 20 years. They're completely different with their own characters. I love learning about those individual car characters. And that's where most of those ownership experiences came from. So I'm going to start posting some photos, just talking a little bit about some of those cars at CH Writing. On Twitter. And Bruce, it looks just about dark at your house, so I think it's time to cap this off.
Yeah, I think it's time. Again, thanks everyone thank you everyone for listening to us.
Bruce has been in the beer a little bit too much already.
I have not. Stop that. I'm a good boy. But thank you everyone. Good night and goodbye.
We'll see you.